We are throwing you back today to the start of 2019 with Jason Kalipa. This was a good episode. We got an opportunity to potentially bring out Jason Kalipa to Australia, but unfortunately, timing didn't quite work out. He was opening a new gym, and whilst we got really close to pulling the trigger on it, we didn't quite get there, which was disappointing. But regardless, we still managed to squeeze in some amazing podcasts with Jason. I would say in the future, it's still very much on the cards for him to come to Australia. He definitely really wants to. So making that happen, I'm sure will be, you know, something that we'll get done in the next 2 years. This is just like, you know, Jason's one of those guys where he just has that infectious energy. He's got so many stories to talk about. He's exceeded in high performance in so many aspects of life, not just in business, but obviously also in training, also in competing. And he just still, even in his kind of work with cancer now because of his daughter, with his family, even that sort of stuff, he's, you know, exceeding extremely well in. And, you know, I think everyone kind of stays up to date with what Jason is doing. I'll tell you what, he's in a very good position right now with all his online stuff for the kind of shift the fitness industry has taken online. He's definitely a guy you always want to keep your eye on because he's always a couple of steps ahead of the curve. And so if you're keeping up and doing similar stuff to what he's doing, you're definitely going to stay ahead of the game.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a pretty crazy ride, I think, since CrossFit started, from being, was the second CrossFit Games champion?
Yes, 2008.
Yep. Second champ. And he was really at the top of the game for ages in there, and he's been top of the gym game now for a very long period of time. So I think that's why we look up to him and why we're excited to have him on the show.
Yeah. And guys, supporting this episode today is Blue Blocks. So they are the advanced blue light blocking technology that is in, you know, the nicest, coolest, trendiest frames. We use the daylight blue time blockers. So there's the clear lenses, which block 30% of blue light. And that's the reason you're using those is because if you are, well, we all are, I'd say I would be hard-pressed to find someone in my life that doesn't use a screen for at least 5-6 hours a day. And that's not just your phone. That's the TV. That's the laptop. That's all screens. They're emitting so much blue light that basically, it's not good for our eye health. It's not good for our brains. It's just not good for our skin, for our circadian rhythms, for all this stuff. And so, if you are doing big time in front of a screen, I would say that's, you know, 3-4 hours plus a day. You do want to be protecting your eyesight and your brain from the damaging effects of too much artificial light. So you can do that with the daytime lenses, and then of course, the really popular ones is the orange lenses, which everyone uses at nighttime. However, if you are using some and you do have cheap technology, what we found out after seeing the laboratory testing of all kinds of different brands, very popular brands on the internet, they don't actually block the light. The lenses have not been developed to block the blue and green wave spectrum that you need to fully block to go to bed and to sleep well. So Blue Blocks is the only company we know of that actually has developed a lens that does block this, and they've tested it with proper gear and in a lab. And so you can trust these lenses. I'll tell you what, when I put those orange glasses on versus the old pairs I used to use, it's like taking a drug. I'm like on a very, very steep decline towards falling asleep in bed.
Yeah, it works. You notice the difference so much. You can basically look at your iPhone all the way until your eyes shut and you are asleep.
Yeah.
Which never normally happens.
Yeah, yeah. No, using the phone with those glasses, I feel safe.
Yeah.
I feel protected. So guys, if you're interested in picking up a pair of these and looking good and stylish while you block blue light, go to Blue Blocks. That's BLUBLOX.com. BLUBLOX.com. And when you check out, use the code MMP. So just those three letters, MMP, and you're going to save 15% off any of the eyewear. All right, guys, let's jump into the show. This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Raph Friedman, and you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. All right, Mind Muscle Project, welcome back to another episode. Today we have on, well, for the second time technically, but for the first official time, Jason Kalipa. I think pretty much everyone listening to this show now knows that name. So it's an honor for us to get you on, Jason. It's as many questions, as many rabbit holes we want to go down. But I thought I would open the show with probably the most difficult question you've ever had to answer. So,
oh boy.
Was it more difficult to try and take down Froning in 2014, where you had to like carry a log and shit and drag a sled and just do all this ridiculous shit, or get Gary Vee on your podcast?
Oh, no. Was it... No. Well, so... To, you know, with let's to real talk. In 2014, you know, those games, for me, that was the pinnacle of my career in terms of CrossFit. Even though I took third that year and the year before I took second and earlier I won, 2014 was the best year because I put in so much work to get there. And then to get back on the podium just felt awesome. And, you know, I think it's interesting the way life works. I think when you achieve success in whatever it is, and you could attribute success in whatever success is for you, the more work you put into achieving something, the more meaningful it becomes. And I put so many years into, you know, competing in CrossFit that 14 was just a dedication of just hours of training, carrying stuff, swimming, running, you name it. And so, you know, not getting the win was tough, but getting back on the podium was incredible. You know, and then in regards to getting Gary Vee on my podcast, I mean, the guy is on a whole different level of energy. He's what you see is what you get. Super, super cool guy. But, you know, getting him on the podcast is just a, you know, I think a lot of people, when they look at what people do, they assume it just came easy, or they assume you see someone has some type of success. Let's just take, I don't know, Matt Frazier, right? And they say, oh, well, he has a perfect body type, or whoever knows what they say. But they haven't seen that he's been competing in Olympic lifting since he was like born, and all these years of hard training he's put in to get to where he's at. And so with Gary Vee, you know, yes, we got him on our podcast, but they didn't see all the different times I reached out to create the conversation and the relationship we developed over the years, so that when it was time to have him on, it was the right time. And I think that's what's interesting about relationships. That's what's interesting about different types of things, that it doesn't happen overnight. It takes time to kind of create these type of things.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting. I've actually heard that before, like with in sort of the podcast land, where people have had on really big guests, and you know, people have asked them, oh, how'd you get them on the podcast? Like, it's obviously a big name. It's kind of like a level above where you are in terms of whatever you want to call it, influence or whatever. And yeah, same sort of thing. Oh, I was actually one of the first guys to start commenting on their videos, you know, 4 years ago. And that's how he recognized me. And then, you know, he always replies back to my comments. And then one day I DM'd him and then we started a conversation there. So is that kind of how it worked with you and Gary?
Yeah, we have a lot of mutual friends. Same thing with like Shane Dorian, who is a big wave surfer, mutual friends, got connected years ago, created a good relationship, Lewis Howes and other people. And, you know, I like to think about people I'd love to talk to. And then I try and find ways to talk with them. And I don't want anything from them. I just want to be able to get to know them and learn from them. And I think that's a great way to start off relationships. I mean, I get direct messages, emails every day from people who typically want something for some reason. But it's when people like seem extremely genuine, and when they actually want to like learn some kind of something, and I feel like I could actually help them, that's when I get engaged, because it makes me feel like, wow, these people are looking at, they want a little bit of expertise that I've had, and they just want to learn. They don't want anything for free. They want to go out and do the work. They just want to get advice on it, which is kind of the way I structure each one of my relationships is, you know, how can I provide value to them? How can we have a great relationship? And then if something comes of it where we do business or whatever, great. But if not, that's not the intention from the beginning.
Mm. Yeah, I think there is a low-level expectation of everyone these days that people will want the relationship for some reason. And it's kind of hard to get out of that mentality. You see people connecting over a certain reason. You're just waiting for them to do something together. But I think you're right. I think if it starts genuine, maybe more as a friendship, there's a better chance of people wanting to do something together in the future if that opportunity arises.
Yeah, and I think you want to align with people that have similar core values to you. You know, all the proceeds from the book that we are promoting that releases January 8th go to pediatric cancer. And Gary was supportive of this organization, NIGU, which I am as well. And so we aligned on that level and we could align on it. And that was a core value of ours. So that's how we connected as well. And so I think what's interesting about it for anybody who's trying to perhaps gain information in the fitness business or influencer perspective, it's really just understanding what what can you do for other people? How can you make an impact on others? And then over time, there just becomes these natural synergies that occur. For a long time, I mean, a decade, I've been putting out content for gym owners, providing and sharing my insight that I've learned for without anything I want in return, other than I just want to see the industry rise up. Because the better the industry does, the better we all do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good way to approach it.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, I heard someone saying, probably applies more to Australia and America right now, because obviously the CrossFit market, the affiliate landscape is pretty saturated. We don't need more gyms, we need better gyms. I think that that's probably one thing that didn't necessarily help us in the beginning, is obviously it's double-edged sword, right? We grew really fast, it helped bring in lots of people, brought a lot of attention to it. But on the same token, I'm sure you probably agree with this, a lot of people open gyms that probably shouldn't open gyms. They're probably just not ready to own a hard, difficult business like a gym, right? And then as a result, over the next 4 or 5 years, CrossFit then started to develop more of a bad name. Better business practices then had to start taking place. But, you know, we couldn't have achieved the growth and the success without those people opening their gyms, even though they necessarily shouldn't have. That kind of leads us to... Sorry, go for it.
A really good way to look at it is CrossFit in general and boutique fitness centers have a low barrier to entry and a high learning curve. And because of that, if you're just a hobbyist or a fan, you can get started for $10,000, whatever it is, but they don't realize that it takes a long time to understand the ins and outs of the business and the coaching. And that's okay. You know, it's just unlike other businesses, like starting a conventional gym, you need $1 million because of the equipment. So the barrier to entry is higher. So those people typically seek out more advice before they open it. Whereas a gym, you know, you get a couple friends, throw in a couple G's and you open up a gym. That's the big difference, I think.
Mm. Was there a point where you felt like you were that? You were that person that opened the gym and you didn't really know what you were doing. You had to learn as you were falling? Or did you feel like when you opened from day one, nah, I know what I'm doing. I have a plan. I have a vision. I have core values. I have all this stuff.
No, I mean, I think I'm still, you know, learning every single day. The industry is shifting every single day. So if you're not pivoting and if you're not growing, then you're being left behind. And, you know, before I opened up our gym, you know, I was really fortunate, blessed to start working at the front desk of a fitness center at the age of 15, really young. And when I graduated from high school, I started working sales, and twice a week I would ride the elliptical with the owner of the gym. And I would learn everything I could from him about the conventional gym business, everything I could. And that played a big role, right? That played a big role in my ability that when I did graduate from college, when I did open up a business, I was able to do so with this earned confidence, this background of just such, you know, so much knowledge about the business. I felt better about it. I didn't open it just as a hobby. I opened it with the intention to provide for my family. That said, I kept learning every single week.
Mm. So at what point did you feel like you made a bit more of a transition out of not really hobbyist, but like, you know, amateur gym owner to a bit more of a pro? Was it at the time when you opened your next location? Was it when you first turned a profit? Like, what point did you feel like, okay, I have a bit more of a grasp on this now?
Well, I mean, our first location was really small. We moved out of it in 6 months. I signed a 6-month lease. I had no credit. I had nothing. So they only gave me 6 months. We moved out of there, then we moved to a new location, and that location moved a bunch more times. And then we opened up a second location, a third location, et cetera. I don't think we were ever professionalized, really, until we hired professionals. And what I mean by that is, in the beginning, I was just a gym rat who had some business sense. But over time, we brought in really great coaches and great people. We never really professionalized until I brought in outside CFO, outside people who worked in the corporate environment, who brought with them structure that we did not have in our space.
And was it getting the scale that allowed you to afford to make that move? Like having enough locations that you could, you know, pay a CFO, get like more professionals into the business?
Well, I mean, we had a lot of things that kind of, call it luck, call it doors that open, that allowed us to get to where we're at. So after we opened up our first location, as we're transitioning, this is 08, we opened the first location. 09, you know, I'm still at the CrossFit Games. I become part of HQ seminar staff. And I would work on the weekends, generate the whatever money that was. and then pay my bills, the money I was getting from HQ, and then invest everything back into the business, new equipment, new this. Because I opened our gym with like $5,000, you know, nothing. And so I kept investing back in. So HQ helped me with that money. But then after a while, we opened up one location. We then went to two, went to three. I was able to pay myself a little bit, had some sponsorship money coming in. And then a couple of years later, when we started getting into corporate wellness, those corporate accounts really just kind of exponentially grew us. And so now we've been able to self-fund with our 20 locations we have today.
Hmm. Well, with the 20 locations, it's not, I think for people listening, they sort of know it's not a franchise, but, you know, it could be. I mean, I think, you know, part of the conversation is, you know, you took CrossFit out of your name. You're one of the most influential, most popular gyms in the world, getting a lot of attention from CrossFit HQ, and you decided to take it out of your name, obviously stay affiliated, which, you know, maybe from some people who are maybe more business-minded, this could be a play to start a franchise, to start a CrossFit, CrossFit style franchise, right? A bit more barbells, a bit more gymnastics, that sort of thing. The way it was kind of moving. That's kind of what maybe we saw from our end, but obviously it hasn't played out that way. Instead, obviously, you've started investing a lot more. You're doing podcasts, you know, doing more social media stuff. You got the app, that sort of thing. Was there ever a time where you thought, I do want to turn this into a franchise, and maybe you pulled the pin and you went down a different path? Or what was the intention there? Like, why 20 and not 500?
Yeah, I mean, could we do a franchise? Absolutely. Could we do a license? 100%. I mean, we get asked almost every day. But for me, for us, the long-term vision is, how do we provide for our members a phenomenal service, and how do we provide for our team? And if we started doing franchise and license, we lose some of the control of the quality we're trying to put out. So the reason why we have 20 locations is because we have six that are open to the public. The rest are corporate, and then we have digital. So there's three arms of our business: digital products, where we sell our session plans and our programming to other gym owners; corporate gyms, which are inside businesses, Western Digital, GoPro, Lucasfilms, etc. And then open to the public, like the gyms that you guys have, right? Like traditional gyms. And the reason why we haven't decided to do, you know, franchise or license agreements, I think mainly is we don't want to have people flying our flag unless we're in control of it right now. And we think the digital side of our business has a lot of potential because we created our own app for our coaches and our members. That's why we did it. But after investing all this money into it, we have session plans and programming for all of our coaches from China to Mexico. So that everybody coaches similar. They're never going to be all the same, but similar. So they look at the workout. Here's your warm up. Here's your timeline. Here's your stimulus. Here's your this or that. Here's your daily video that we give you on our app. Now we want to roll it out to other businesses because it just aligned with why we did it. We did it for us, but it worked well for others. And so we're not going out there trying to grow the business with the intention of, like, you know, making a bunch of money or creating profits. We're doing it. How can we do what we're doing right now really well? And then how can we then scale that in the future is kind of what we're thinking about.
Right. And so where do the podcasts and the evolution of the Jason Clipper brand, like, how does that fit into the NC Fit vision?
I mean, that's an interesting question. So the podcasts are something we started for business of fitness is because we wanted to share information for gym owners. And I'm really interested in it. I get excited about the business side of fitness. So we did it because I wanted to do it. I wanted to enjoy talking to people and I wanted to record it. AMRAP Mentality came out because I wanted to interview really cool people. Like, for example, there's a woman named Carrie Walsh, who's a multiple time Olympian for beach volleyball. I'm fascinated on how do you go to the Olympics 4 or 5 times? How do you stay at the top of your game for 20, 30 years? What's that mindset take? But she wouldn't be good for the business side of fitness. So that's why we started the AMRAP Mentality, to interview interesting people who didn't tailor into business side. Hmm. So we did it because I was interested. Now, what does that catapult into? We have a book, As Many Reps as Possible. It releases soon, where it's my mindset and different types of things. So obviously the podcast helped the book. And then we're also releasing an app open to the public instead of just available to our members, which these podcasts, again, feed into. So that's kind of a big ecosystem.
Mm.
The podcast and the book feed into the app, feed into our gyms.
Mm. And how do you, well, obviously you've got the two sides of the coin, the athlete and the business owner. When do you think the switch, like, I don't know if it ever, if there ever was a full switch for you, but it seems like there was obviously a switch from the athlete to the business. How did you make that cross? Like, when did you decide, oh, you know what, just putting in that extra hour of training today is not the hour I want to spend it on. I want to spend it on time with my coaches, working on the vision and core values of the business. Like, at what point did you make that switch, and how did that go?
I mean, for a long time, I was balancing building. I mean, in 2014, as an example, I had two children. Our business, I think we probably had, I don't know, 14 locations at the time. And, you know, trying to balance, trying to get back on the podium, be a family man and grow this business and do the best I can for everybody was really tough. And eventually, you know, what would happen is every year I'd have a conversation with my wife and say, hey, how are you feeling this year? Right. So I met my wife when we were 15 years old, and she's only, that's it. I mean, she's just her. And so because I've been with her for so long, I really look to her opinions as like really highly, obviously. And so every year before I go to the CrossFit Games, I'd say, hey, are we ready to make this commitment together? Because I knew what it did from a time away from family, for the stress that it put on her, but also for what it did on the business. You know, if I'm training 3, 4, 5 hours a day, then who's really in charge of leading this, you know, business and growing it? And so over time, I had to start reprioritizing. That's why in 15, I went team. And then obviously when my daughter in 16 got diagnosed with leukemia, that was an easy decision to remove competing. But over time, you know, it was always something in my head that I had to say is, am I being selfish by competing? Am I not giving the best I could to the business, to my family? And the business, I have a responsibility to our coaches and our members and my family. I want to be a good dad and husband. So it was a constant thing I was thinking about. And then eventually I had to switch that gear.
Mm.
And what did your days look like? Say, if we go back to the peak then, say 2014, it sounds like, where you had all the locations and you were trying to go one better than second.
What did my day look like?
Yeah. Like how did you literally fit everything in?
Yeah. I mean, I talk about this mindset called AMRAP mentality. And the idea is that for a while I would be, you know, in one thing, but thinking about something else. I'd be on a conference call, but riding an assault bike. I'd be walking my kids, but thinking about walking on my hands across the game. Right. And this wasn't good. And so my days in 11, 12, 13, 14, et cetera, were very prioritized. I'm going to wake up in the morning, you know, early. I'm going to go in the garage. I'm going to crush a workout. Then I'm going to go to work. Then I'm going to go to the gym. Once I'm at the gym or whatever, I'm going to work out with the crew midday. Then I'm going to be working some more. Then right before dinner, I'd always do like a little EMOM, and then boom, you know, it's family dinner time, spend the night with the kids, and then get back on emails in the evening. And, you know, I've been doing that for a really long time. The only difference between what I was doing when I was competing and what I'm doing now is that the volume of my training has decreased. So whereas before I would do like a morning session, afternoon session, and like an evening skill session, or on the weekends I'd end up doing, you know, 4 or 5 hour swims or, you know, and biking or whatever. Now it's more like, hey, I got an hour to 90 minutes a day tops, get in, crush it. But the other stuff is still there. I still wake up early, you know, getting a little cardio, then spend time with the family, go to work, and then I'm always trying to get home for dinner, and then I'm back on emails once they go to bed till late at night, trying to segment and prioritize what I want to do.
How hard is that to stick to, like, over a year?
You mean the segmenting, you mean?
Yeah, like the set structure that you decide on. Like, I ask that personally because I find that I try and set up a structure like that and it lasts like 2 weeks and then I change it.
For me, I have a lot of things that I want to be good at. And unless I structure it that way, then I'm not going to be as good as I can at it. So that's my motivation every day.
Hmm. Do you have mentors that you currently work with to help with that stuff or provide advice in that area?
Well, for a long time when I was competing in CrossFit, I had a mindset coach who really worked with me, and that was an incredible, incredible thing. He taught me how to understand what was in my control versus out of my control. He taught me about positive self-talk, which are very good tools. And, you know, I also have business mentors that I sit down with on a regular basis to make sure that I'm working on the right path. And so between these business mentors, my sports psychologist, and obviously talking with my family, hopefully all those things hold me accountable to keep being a better version of myself every single day.
Hmm. Yeah, that's that well-rounded approach, I think, is pretty important. Coming back to some of the family stuff, we're not going to dive into some too much of the stuff, but I did hear you talk about once, you know, you having to reprioritize putting extra work in on your relationship. And that's something that I think everyone is often seems to be like one of the first things that gets neglected is people's relationships at home. And I think that it's often the one that when that's going not smoothly, it affects most areas of your life. How have you found balancing that? How have you gone, like, what's worked well, what hasn't worked well? How's that kind of evolved over time with being the best husband you can be?
I mean, I think it comes down to communication, obviously. I mean, I met my wife when we were really young, really, really young. I mean, 15, you know, I've been with her longer than I haven't been with her. And it's just about communication and not trying not to be selfish and really reflecting about, hey, are my personal goals impacting something else? And my wife and I always said, our relationship is number one, because if we don't keep it tight, then the kids are not going to be raised in an environment that's positive, right? Now, obviously there's people that get divorced, and that's, I'm not referring to that. I'm just saying, if you have a relationship in the house and it's not going well, you have a duty to have those date nights, reconnect, make sure you're moving in the right direction. And, you know, my wife and I have been through our fair share of adversity with our daughter getting leukemia. And what really keeps us grounded is just good, solid communication and having regular check-ins where we're making sure we're not holding stuff in. We're both trying to elevate each other and what they're doing. And from a relationship perspective, I think that's really important. And it's something I talk about in the book, as many reps as possible, is that, you know, I think we have a duty that when life is good to build this hedge in our fitness, build a hedge in our financial, work hard to build this hedge, but also in relationships, be present, be focused so that you create these great bonds. So that if something in your life ever does go south, you have the relationships, you have the financial, and you have the fitness to be able to overcome it the best you can. And I think what's really important for my wife and I is that when we spend time together, let's try and really spend time together. Let's go out together. Let's make sure we're having good, meaningful conversation and not being distracted by our cell phone while we're trying to have dinner together.
Do you have rules around that? Do you have like you know, Friday night's date night, it's phones in the car or phones at home, or like, do you have rules around enhancing your communication?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's no specific night, but like, for example, tonight we're going to dinner tonight, but like, we go out, you know, we're very fortunate. Our family is very close by, so they can watch our children. But like once a week, we try and go out. We also try and travel just her and I every now and then to do adult stuff. And we travel as a family all the time, but sometimes it's nice just her and I to reconnect and do adult stuff. And, but yeah, 100%, there's a no tolerance policy if you're trying to, you know, go have drinks with your wife, have a nice little cocktail, and you're on the phone half the time. You know, my whole thing is just don't even go, right? Like last night, for example, we went to our family's house for dinner and we had scheduled to leave at 5 o'clock, and I got home at like 4:50, and I told my wife, I'm like, listen, I'm sorry. I got held up in a bunch of meetings. I have a lot of work I need to get completed in the next hour. And I don't want to, you know, leave you guys hanging. So can you go to the house and go to dinner, and I'll meet you there in an hour. So that's what I did. I prioritized work because I had to get this done. But then once I got there, I was all about the family. But I didn't want to go there and then be working, because now it's conflicting. You know what I mean?
It would be like if you're an athlete and you went there and just did handstand push-ups and burpees like in between the meals.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, you're 100% right. I mean, and you know, and on that note about being present and focused is like, I'd be conferencing calling with Asia, because we opened up locations years ago in Asia with Western Digital, and I'd be conference calling with them, but I'd be trying to get in my assault intervals. And I mean, that's really tough, because what would always happen to me is I'd always ask myself at the end of that conversation, right? Did I do the best I could on that conference call? And did I do the best I could on those intervals? And the answer is always no. Mm-hmm. So I'd always ask myself, like, was I engaged enough that I answered the questions well? Or was it more like you're screaming on the bike, then all of a sudden you hear your name, you unmute the phone, yes, the answer, good answer, boom, you moody again, right? Like, that's not the best way. And so I think over time, if you're an athlete, if you want to see success as an athlete, then hey, go into the gym, turn on the clock, and get to work. Hmm. Right? Instead of dilly-dallying for 30 minutes to put on your knee sleeves.
Hmm. Yeah, and I think it's just been an evolution over time that we've seen in the gym. But, you know, I would love to bring in some kind of lockbox for our clients' phones. But now you just see people bring work to the gym. It used to be a sacred place where, you know, it's really, really important to switch off and be present in your workout and listen to the coach and that sort of thing. But now what seems to happen, all right, back squats, rest. All right, everyone runs to their bag or checks their phone or takes a call and stuff like that. And immediately they just lose what they came here for, right? To get away from that sort of stuff, to enjoy themselves, yeah. To speak to others. And it's not everyone, but man, it's a lot more people than it used to be. And I think it's becoming a real problem.
Yeah, I think just setting the expectation. And when they're in the middle of the AMRAP, they're not stopping, or they shouldn't be. And I would just take that approach to the entire hour class.
Mm.
Like, hey, this is not a 15 or 20 minute AMRAP. This is an hour long fitness AMRAP. And within that fitness AMRAP of your life, there's this 15 minute actual workout. But you're segmenting your day. And right now you're prioritizing your fitness, which is phenomenal, but then prioritize it. And then after you're done, go prioritize something else.
Mm. There's been a conversation within gyms, just sticking to sort of the clients that do come to affiliates with a certain level of expectation. Now, I think when people are trying CrossFit for the first time, there is not necessarily a lot of expectation. So what they get, they're generally very happy with, as long as it's, you know, it's super welcoming and everyone's very happy and they're taught well and it's professional and that sort of stuff, right? Tick all those boxes, clean, nice facilities, blah, blah, blah. But what tends to happen, there might be a bit of a phenomenon. We actually talked about this with Harry Singh, who owns CrossFit NYC, that people get to that 4 or 5 year mark, maybe earlier, 3 year mark, and then they start going, you know, we don't do enough toes to bar, or, you know, we need more power, we need more barbell cycling in the program. And all these questions or queries and stuff that they want to know, when is this stuff coming, or why is there not more volume in the program, et cetera, et cetera. How have you dealt with that? Obviously, it's a different approach that you take, because you're not the coach on the floor necessarily anymore, trying to reason with the members about why you're doing what you're doing. Instead, maybe you sit a lot higher and you go, okay, maybe we need a new product offering. Maybe we need to do something different. Or maybe we need to tell coaches that if a member gets to that stage and they can't be happy, maybe they do need to move on, find something else. I'm sure you've crossed this path before. You've had these conversations over the periods of owning gyms. How have you dealt with this? Have you dealt with this problem?
Well, I mean, like 5 years ago, I started to see a demand for people who wanted a lower complexity class. They wanted to come in, they wanted to get a little bit more sweaty. And I think at first CrossFitters were so negative towards it. And they say, oh, well, everything's scalable. Okay, I get that. But over time, what we've done at our gym is we incorporated a 30 minute class, a 45 minute class, and a 60 minute class. And the argument I make is one is not better than the other. They're not. Most of our workouts in CrossFit last anywhere from 15 to 20 minutes. So if you tell me you need an hour, you don't need an hour for your workout. What you do need an hour for is more complexity and variance. So the way we do it at our gym, our 30-minute offering is a great program, but it's the lowest level of variance and complexity because your coach has less time to develop skills with you. So in that class, it's rowing, wall balls, whatever, because you only have a 5-10 minute warm up and then you get into your workout. Then you transition to a 45 class where we have a pure strength lift, back squat, deadlift and press, followed by a conditioning workout. And then finally you have our traditional 60 minute offering, which has rope climbs, clean and jerks, because we have more time to develop skills with you before we get into the workout of the day. And that's how we've tried to answer this stress of having these other programs. What happened is 24 Hour Fitness years ago, conventional gym, you know, created this huge, you know, amount of people that come in, they track based. CrossFit comes in over a decade ago and says, hey, look, those track-based machines are not the best way to get in peak performance, peak fitness outside the gym. We're going to add a lot of complexity, a lot of variance, and we're going to have a coach, and it's going to be great. But it created this big gap. And in that gap, companies like F45 did a great job exploiting that gap, where there's some complexity, some variance, but not as much. And so for us at our business, we tailor to the three gaps, right? Lowest level complexity and variance, middle level, and then full level. And we recommend people to go to each one based on how often they come in and what they desire to do. If you only come in once a week and you come in to NC60 and we're snatching, you might not get as productive of a workout as if you went to NC30 and we were doing wall balls in a row workout. It might be better for you. Whereas if you come in maybe 3 days a week, maybe we just do some pure strength and conditioning. But if you come in every day, we want you to do more complexity. We want you to have more variance. So you stay inspired, stay motivated. And that's why 60 is still obviously a pillar program of ours. So that's how we've addressed these concerns over the years, is diversifying our offering based on the amount of movements we incorporate. Because one of the things that I've recognized is that we took a poll of a little over 2,000 of our members, right? We surveyed them. And on average, our members came in, I think, like, it was really three buckets. It was like one time a week, three times a week, or like six plus. And what that showed me is that if you're someone who comes in one times a week and you're trying to get better at the snatch, it's going to be really tough for you to get better at the snatch, because we only snatch once a week, if that, and you're only coming in once a week. So what are the chances of you actually hitting it? So what we did is we diversified our offering so that our members have a better chance of becoming competent. And once they become competent at these movements, they can now start producing a lot of power with them.
Mm-hmm. And so how do you deal with the person that wants more than the hour?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. So to answer that, we have a competitors program that we put out on our app. But I think a lot of it just comes down to good communication. I think some of this has been mitigated because of my competitive background. When the competition was really heating up in 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, people would come to me and they'd talk about their program. And I would tell them that, hey, from my experience, and I've done this a lot, right? That it's not necessarily about the program and the volume. It's about the people you're training with and the effort you're putting in. And I think because of my competitive background, I nipped some of that in the butt because it was validated by what I had achieved.
Yeah.
But I think everybody wants to do more, but no one ever wants to talk about the environment they're doing it in.
Yeah, it's a good point. So does the 60, 45, 30 and the competitors program, could that all be running at the same time in the same center?
So our compete program is only like once a week on the weekends, we get everybody together, but it's available on the app. But as part of the compete program, you have to take our NC60 workout. You have to. So yeah, we have 30s going on at the same time as 45s and 60s, depending on the location. But our compete program is founded on, you have supplemental work in the morning and evening, but you need to take our CrossFit class or 60-minute class, because we feel like it's very important to stay a part of the community and not create this elitist competitor program that could ruin the dynamic in the gym. In addition, something to think about with programming, and one of the reasons why it's such a touchy subject, is that it's easy for an athlete to point to that as a reason why they're not as successful as they are. And what they need to do is have a good conversation with the coach about what other factors come into play. How are you sleeping? How are you eating? How consistent are you? Have you been consistent every day of the week? What's the big picture? And I think as a competitive athlete, it's easy to say, oh man, the reason why I didn't do as well in the open is because that program sucked. But really you need to take a hard look at yourself and think about, how much effort am I putting in and how consistent have I been?
When you were coming up through the ranks, did you ever follow a program, or did you basically make the whole thing up yourself?
Yeah, not really. most of the guys I know that are at the tip of the spear, they create their own program because they know their body. And one of the things to think about, if you're a competitor listening to this, I just want you to take this food for thought. If you have a coach and they tell you to go out and set a PR on your Fran on tomorrow, but you're not feeling great, you didn't sleep well, you're not, you know, whatever, are you in the best position to PR that Fran? And so if you don't PR it, then all of a sudden it might mess with your head, because maybe you're not getting better. Where on the contrary, if maybe tomorrow you have scheduled a pretty low key day, a nice little EMOM, whatever, but you're feeling great, you're fired up, you want a PR. In my opinion, you listen to your body and create adjustments based on that. Every now and then, if your coach tells you to go do something, you should do it when you don't want to, because that's going to help you. But in a nutshell, what I would do is I would listen to my body. If I was feeling good, let's go. If I'm not feeling good, let's tailor it back. Let's listen to it. Let's adjust. But it takes a lot of awareness in who you are, and you need to hold yourself accountable. And when you are feeling good, you got to get after it.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, auto-regulation is probably the number one most important factor, I think, that any athlete can understand and get good at, is knowing when to push, when to pull back, when to come into the gym, when to take time off. And just to your thing before, you know, what are these other athletes, you know, what are they not addressing in their life as well? I think a lot of people just generally not fulfilled in whatever they're doing. It might have nothing, they might be eating perfect macros, they might get enough sleep, but maybe they're unfulfilled in their friendships or their relationships or the relationship with their parents, right? Or their siblings or their career or whatever it might be. And it drags into the other areas of their life, right? And then they find it hard to put the effort in or to see success because the other areas of life are making them unhappy. And I've seen people improve in those areas of their life and take time off the gym and come back, and all the issues that they brought up before just aren't really an issue anymore. And I think that people don't necessarily want to admit that or address those things, and instead they maybe mask them a little bit with the program or the gym or whatever it might be. Life is made up of everything, right? So when things aren't going wrong in one area, it's going to affect others.
Yeah.
I wanted to kind of pivot a little bit in this conversation. You've got a fair few things going on, but you did make we kind of touched on it a little bit, but you did make a decision to sort of take CrossFit out of your name. And obviously with the changes going on recently, getting rid of regionals, right? Making some big cuts to the CrossFit Games, all these sort of changes and that. I feel like we made the right move taking CrossFit out of our name. Obviously you feel that way as well. Firstly, what made you come to that decision? And secondly, how do you feel about all these changes that are taking place, pulling money out of the games and putting it back into the affiliates?
Well, so all the changes that are coming up, I think that's we'll talk about that next. But I think changing from NorCal CrossFit to NC Fit was a very, very difficult decision. I have deep-rooted ties with CrossFit, and I love the community. I love the methodology. But we needed to be in control of our own destiny. And as a business owner, we had to make a very hard decision to say, you know, if CrossFit, we wanted to be in control of our first impression. When you get introduced to NC Fit, I want you to come in and let me tell you who we are. I didn't want to have any preconceived notions based on the name on the wall or the brand on our building. I wanted to be the person who could explain that to you. A program we could offer and a methodology we believe in could be CrossFit, but that's not who we are as a business or as a brand. There's a big difference there. And, you know, I ruffled a lot of feathers by changing that up. And you can only begin to imagine how challenging that was for me, a guy who's really dedicated his life to this sport. And it was a little unfortunate about how some things went down, but at the end of the day, we had to do what we felt like was best for our members, for our coaches, and for the trajectory of our business. And when you're aligned in the same sentence as something you have no control over, I think any business owner would say, even CrossFit would say, CrossFit would not want to be called CrossFit Reebok, like meaning like forever, because now they're attached to something they have no control over necessarily, right? And there could be co-branding and things of that nature, but I think there's a big difference between it being your actual brand name. And so that was one of the big reasons. Now, for anybody who's looking to rebrand, I think it's a very simple question. Well, the affiliation question is very simple. If it brings value to your business, keep doing it. If it doesn't, you have an obligation to reevaluate and just see if it doesn't bring value, why are you spending money on it, right? If it brings value, keep spending money on it. I'm not here to tell you one way or another. But with your name on the wall, I do think something we didn't do a good job of and I wish we had done a better job of, was defining who NC Fit was and not just saying, hey guys, coaches, hey, check it out. We're just changing our name from NorCal CrossFit to NC Fit. We're the same company, same people, same everything. Because these coaches really identified as a CrossFit company, as CrossFit coaches, and they feel like we came in and just cut it from underneath them. I wish we had done a better job saying, this is who NC Fit is. We're a group of like-minded individuals trying to raise the bar. This is our mission. This is our vision. This is what we're doing for our members. And we're giving back to pediatric cancer. This is what we're doing, right? But at the time, we had maybe, at that time, we probably had about 80 people working at the company, maybe 100, give or take. And so as we disseminated this information, I wish we had done a better job of clearly defining who NC Fit was when we rolled it out. That was a big learning lesson. Now, in regard to your question about the changes in the CrossFit Games, look, for me, I want to see the CrossFit Games still be successful, of course. Do I think they can maybe be called Fittest on Earth in the future instead of being called CrossFit Games? There's not this conflict between CrossFit and competition? Maybe. But I think HQ needs to take a step back for a second, figure out what they want to do, and then clearly communicate it instead of doing, you know, small information pieces here, because then people start to speculate. And that's tough for the sport. But I think for me, looking at the changes in the games, it just reaffirms that I believe we're on the right trajectory, that we have done what we believe is best for our business, controlled what was in our control, and at the same time, be supportive of everybody else in the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think you're right. You touched on everything there perfectly. The only thing I would add to that is that I think a lot of people that lived for the regionals kind of put a hole in their sails, kind of shot them down.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, like a lot of people retired.
Well, I mean, I have two opinions on that. Number one is some of these guys needed a little bit of a reality check. They were really skewed towards competing, and they didn't realize, like, there's only a few people that make any money in CrossFit. And so if you're dedicating your life to this and there was other areas that you were dropping out on, you know, you might have had regrets in the future. Now, on the flip side, you know, there's now a lot of other opportunities to compete with these sanctioned events. Who knows what's even going to happen with sanctioned events? But what I would tell people who are looking to compete in CrossFit is that just like any other professional sport, only a very small percentage ever make it to a point where they're making any money. So you need to be doing it for something bigger than money and fame, because the money and the fame does not come quick and it doesn't come easy. And you need to have a strong internal why of why you want to go in there and why you want to throw down every single day. And if you do, then if you qualify for the games or not, it's irrelevant, because you're enjoying the experience and that's something that's a part of you. But if you're doing it because you want to try and get more Instagram followers, that's probably not going to be the strong enough why that when things get really tough, are you going to be able to push through?
Yeah, it's almost like now that's almost off the table now. I don't really see many people picking up followers based off their success at the games, really. Most of the people that have already established themselves with the big followings have the big followings, and it's staying the way it's staying. It's really hard for a new person to break through. Like, take for example, Ricky Garrard, obviously very controversial figure, Australian CrossFitter, first one to kind of put on the chopping block for performance enhancing drugs. But even him, with all the media that was surrounding him, he still didn't pick up a very big following during that process. So I don't know if you'll...
Yeah, but I think, you know, he's a rare case though. Like, you know, if I was Ricky Garrard, if I have any advice for that guy, His Instagram post frustrated me. It did, because he came out originally and he's like, you know, taking responsibility, right? Which I really appreciated. And then right at the end, he just throws everybody under the bus. He says, well, it's unfortunate because there's a bunch of other people I've seen taking it. And it's like, what that bothers me is that you're deflecting towards everybody else. And what in a weird way, I almost felt like he was saying I had, like when I was years before him, because he left it so broad. And I wish he hadn't have done that, because I think he would have earned more respect, at least from me and other people, by saying, hey, you owned up to something. And if you see other people doing it, then call them out specifically. But by saying everybody, it belittles the whole, I don't know. I just didn't think that was the right way to do it. And I wonder if that's a reason why, you know, media coverage, good or bad, can have an impact on your brand and whether people want to follow you or not. And even if they are following you, you know, my advice to athletes out there, just because you have a big following doesn't mean you're going to be able to translate that into anything meaningful. You know, being popular on Instagram is like being rich in Monopoly. Unless you're really capable of defining what I do think a following does is it gives you an audience and you can influence them, but you got to be a subject material expert at something good to then, you know, so like if I was, I don't know if I was, name one of the top crossers, whoever, right?
Brent Fikowski.
If I was Brent, right? If I was him, I would create like, what is Brent really good at? How do I show the world I'm an expert at this one thing, so that when competition slows down or even during the competition season, people are going to be willing to pay me for that service because I'm so good at it. So you have this influence, you have this audience. Now, how do you let that audience know that you're going to provide value? Just working out with him is not enough value. It needs to be something more. Mm. And that's what I think athletes should be focused on, is what could they do to add value to people? Because then people are going to be willing to pay for it.
Mm. And do you think it's similar in the business space as well? So you've got your own gyms, but you can still help people as gym owners as well.
Yeah, I mean, in the last year or two, I've been on the phone with over 1,000 gym owners. Over 1,000.
Didn't even know that word, that many gym owners.
Jesus.
And let me give you an example. I'm putting myself in the position. I have an audience, right? And I put out to the gym owners, hey, I'm going to take 10-minute calls. And because I have this audience, because they know I have an expertise in something, they are interested in participating. Now, granted, it was free. I'm just saying, but that's an example of a way that we can add value back to the industry, which then long term, I think if you keep adding value over time, there's going to be opportunities to actually make money.
Mm. Yeah. And speaking of adding value to gym owners, do you find you're saying the same stuff on repeat over and over again? Is there some things that keep showing up in the calls that, you know, maybe you talk about a lot in the podcast?
I mean, the biggest thing is obviously people who got in with, you know, 4 different partners, no partnership agreement, started as a hobby, and they need to refocus and treat it more like a business. I mean, that's the underlying theme. Most gyms get to about 120 members and they kind of stall out. And what do they need to do to improve that? It's kind of like the general theme is they need to take a step back and recognize what are they good at? What are they not good at? And how do they either outsource for people to come in to help them with things they're not good at, or spend more time on what they're good at and figure that out. I think that's a common theme, is that you have these guys who are gym owners who are coaching 7-8 hours a day because they don't think they have enough money to pay a coach, but they'll never have enough money to pay a coach if they're not working on the business because they're always in the business. Mm. So it's like this revolving door is typically what I see.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. I think that's, it's a good way of putting it. Do you have a final question for Jason before we jump to the final four?
No, did you get some homework in on, did you receive our final four questions in the email?
Oh, I did. But whenever I get final questions on podcasts, I like to just listen to it and answer it,
hit it on the fly,
from the heart, and not try and create something scripted. You know, I think this whole thing has been an organic conversation, and I'd like to keep it that way.
Yeah,
awesome.
No, nice. I like the style. We've definitely brought up the final four, and people pull out the notebook and the laptop and the iPad. They wheel over the whiteboard, or they open up their notepad. So, different strokes for different folks. So, Jace, first question. Is if you had an opportunity to sit down and interview anyone that is alive today, who would you interview and why?
I would interview The Rock because I'm fascinated by him. I'm fascinated by his work ethic. I'd want to know more about how he grew up and understand that better. And I want to interview him about how he's gotten so popular, been so successful, yet still from everybody I know who knows him really well, because we have some people who know him, everybody tells me that he's a really good dude and he does good things for people. I've always seen him contribute to Make-A-Wish and Children Fighting Cancer. I've seen him do all kinds of charity work. How do you grow and get that popular while still staying true to who you are? That fascinates me because he's put in a lot of hard work. I want to know about that, but he's also gained so much success. How do you gain so much success and not allow it to change who you are as a human at all. Those are two things that I'd be asking about.
Would you say that you've, on your level, dealt with something like that? Seeing a lot of success and have it kind of sway you in different directions or kind of make you act out of character to a certain extent?
No, I mean, I think at my level of, quote, success, I have not experienced, like, I don't think I've changed at all. If anything, after my daughter got sick, I've probably changed significantly for the better. But I wouldn't say that money or fame has changed me at all. I still feel like I'm the same person, the right heart, the way my parents wanted me to be. But I also, you know, am not making $1 billion a year with millions of fans, you know, crazy. Mm. So I don't know if that would change. I'd like to think that no matter how much money I make, no matter how famous I get, I'd like to think that at the core, if you're a good person, you'll remain a good person. And I'd like to think I would still be that way. Mm. I hope.
Mm. Yeah, it's definitely one of those things that you don't know until you get there, right? And I think every person deals with it differently. And the amount of stories that I've heard from people that you think are so good and so genuine just always let you down. So.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that people don't take into consideration. Not to offend people who become jerks when they get popular, but the more popular you get, the more people try and ask you for stuff, and the more people are always like trying to like, they become resentful. And it's, you know, I see it in a certain way where if you achieve certain levels of success, other people around you, they want to throw gray on it. They want to try and pull you down for some reason. And they start to feel entitled about what you have was somehow contributed to them. And I wonder if as you get to high levels of success, if that just gets to a point where it's so extreme, you can't even function anymore with people. And I don't know. I wonder how much of that dynamic plays into it. I'm not justifying anybody being a jerk. I'm just wondering how much of that plays into it.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. I'm sure they deal with all kinds of issues like that. Well, we've had The Rock as an answer a few times, but definitely the best why behind why you get The Rock on. So solid answer. Second question, Jace, is what is something that you do every single day that you feel like is an essential part of your day and, you know, is maybe if you didn't do it, it wouldn't be as successful of a day?
Well, I'm sure you know the answer to this, but it's working out. So yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
If you're not exercising regularly, you're missing out on the greatest, the greatest tool on the planet. And when I say this, I hope that your listeners can take this to heart, is that as a guy who's competed at the high level in a sport, tried to develop skills through fitness, it's translated to when my back was really up against the wall in real life at the most extreme level, when you're in the ICU and just things are really bad with your family, right? And so through fitness, we can learn to overcome adversity in a very low-key setting that can then translate to real life. So fitness for me is yes, it's about stress relief and improved fitness and looking good and whatever, but it's also about what happens in between your ears and the benefit it could give you when life throws you a curveball.
Mm. What would be like the bare minimum you've done to qualify as a workout for the day? Like, I'm sure you've had days where you've squeezed in next to nothing by your standards. Do you have like a story or a day where you just did
like a 30-second AMRAP
on the second?
No, yeah. I mean, for the most part, like if I'm traveling, I'll always set myself, like, for example, as soon as I land, boom, I'm doing a 12-minute AMRAP or a 12-minute EMOM, period. Like no doubt when I land, I remember this one time I landed from Dubai at like some weird hour. And I just, as soon as I got to the hotel room, I felt terrible, but I motivated myself. I worked out for 10, 12 minutes and I feel like $1 million after that.
Hmm. Nice.
And do you have any... And for people that maybe worked out really competitively or just, you know, had goals and everything like that, how do you still keep your training from just feeling like, not as intense or not as good as it used to be? Do you set any goals for yourself or do you just try and write cool workouts and hit them hard?
Yeah, you just got to know why you want to do them. I mean, for me, it's really simple, man. I got two kids, you know? I want to be able to never have fitness be an inhibitor of my life, ever. And that's why I get in there and that's why I hit it, you know? And it's something I do for fun. It's something I do for me. And it's something so that if my son wants to go ride his bike tonight,
You're gonna smoke it.
Let's go. You know,
eat my dust.
Yeah.
What's that?
He's gonna smoke him on the bike ride, basically.
Oh yeah, yeah, exactly. But that's why if people feel like their fitness is monotonous, it's because they're not understanding the reason why they're doing it.
Yeah.
They're fitnessing because they're trying to compete. They're fitnessing because they want to whatever. But what they really need to recognize is that fitness is a stress reliever. Fitness is a tool. Fitness is a way to live your life, you know. And once you understand that, it just changes the perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've thought about that a lot more recently as we sort of, you know, folded up the competitive shirts and put them in the drawer and that sort of thing. I look at my dad and the example that he set. And, like, he was never an elite athlete at anything, but, you know, he's well into his 60s and, you know, he still goes on ski weekends. He still competes at, you know, the Masters, soccer comps and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, if we want to go out, we want to play throw and catch, you know, we don't stand 5 meters apart. You know, we go halfway down the field and I start launching bombs at him and he launches bombs back at me. And, like, that's what I would want to be doing, right? I want to, exactly what you said, put it perfectly, not have fitness be an inhibitor to the rest of my life. And I look at him and I'm like, he looks after himself. He trains every day. He makes it work. If he's not going to get to the gym, you know, he'll just go downstairs. He'll do push-ups, squats. He'll do shitty bench press and all that sort of stuff. But that is right. What fitness is about. It's that consistency over your whole life, right? To be healthy, to wake up and not have pain when you get out of chairs, you know, and be able to swim in the mornings and go to the beach and just enjoy the stuff you love for the rest of your life. I think that's all you can ask for. And that's what it's really about. You just get wrapped up in the moment when you're young.
Yeah, I get that.
Cool. So third question, Jace, is what is something recently that you changed your mind on that is was previously a stronghold belief of yours?
I saw this one come across and I didn't think much of it. That's a really tough question. I think that, you know, when you're 16 years old, I thought I knew something. Then when I was 25 years old, I thought I knew something. As a coach, as a father, whatever. Now that I'm 33, I realize I don't know anything. And I realize that these people in this world that are 90 years old, can you imagine the amount of life experiences that these people have gone through? Can you imagine what you could learn from them? Because every year, life goes like this. You know, it has its ups and downs. And you need to learn how to overcome that. And I think something that I used to think a lot about was that I never really knew how the importance of family until Ava got sick. You know, I think that when your back is really up against the wall and like shit's really hitting the fan, you know, who's going to be there for you? And it's going to be your family. And yeah, I'd recommend anybody who doesn't have a strong relationship with their family to really think about, you know, if something did happen, who would be there for you and would you be there for them? And if not, then look, you can write it off and that's fine. But if there's something there, you should try and start rekindling that relationship because, you know, when your back's against the wall, that's who comes.
Mm. That's good. Yeah. How old? Ava's your oldest, right?
Yeah.
How old is she now?
Seven and a half.
Okay.
She was diagnosed at like 4 and a half.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, been a dad for a while now. So yeah, you had kids quite early in your life.
Yeah, I got married. So I met my wife at 15. We got engaged at like 21, married at 22 and had kids. I want to say at what, 25?
Yeah. Mm. Did you have people it's different obviously in Australian culture and where we live and stuff, but did you have people that were saying like, oh, you know, you're too young, you need to be more independent, you're making a mistake or anything like that?
No, never. I mean, you know, my wife and I, we knew at an early age that, you know, the day I met my wife, I told my mom that I was going to marry her. And it took us a little while to actually seal down the deal. I just knew and it was a done deal. Like, I just think that level of commitment's been something I've tried to do in all areas of my life. You know, I've had one real job and that's been helpful because I've been able to get really good at that one job, you know, and same thing with my relationship.
Mm. Nice.
That's cool.
Yeah. So final question. It's to do with a book and to do with a quote, but I thought I'd pivot a little bit on this just because I think that if we're looking at a book, I think we should check out your book. It's obviously a summary of you and your life experiences and stuff, which would be awesome. And like you said, it starts January 8th, I believe your book comes out, As Many Reps as Possible.
It's available right now on pre-sale on Amazon.
Okay.
But it actually ships, you know, it'll start shipping, you know, early January. And all pre-sale proceeds go to an organization called Nigu.org.
Okay.
Cool.
Awesome. Yeah. So people should 100% go get that. We definitely will have some copies for sure. Probably a good question I thought we could end this with is where you see yourself personally in the next 5 years. I think we've seen such a interesting evolution of the guy who Dave Castro announced 2008 CrossFit Games champion, Jason Kleeper, and everyone going, what the fuck's not Chris Spieler? To the guy now who's sitting in Gary Vee interviewing him on the, you know, the AMRAP, the business fitness AMRAP mentality, writing a book. It's crazy evolution, right? And it's awesome. But where do you see the next 5 years? Maybe you don't know,
back with Dave Castro.
Winning the CrossFit Games again. Where do you see yourself in five years? Or where do you hope to see yourself?
I hope to see myself not far from where I am right now. Like, I'm in a super big state of gratitude right now. You know, family's healthy. My relationships are strong. Business is growing well. And I have a lot of gratitude for a lot. You know, for several years, I couldn't say that, right? But now that Ava's done with treatment and now that things are going good, I'm super grateful for where we're at. And what I want to do in the future, I want to continue to, you know, be a better version of what I could do on a regular basis, keep having check-ins, and grow a business that really makes an impact on people and creates profits. I do. Because with these profits, I could then create sustainability for our coaches and give back to bigger picture, like pediatric cancer or like other organizations. So, you know, we're going to focus on digital. We're going to focus on our current members. We're going to keep doing what we're doing. And hopefully 5 years from now, I'm in the same place. I'm happy. I feel good. Family's healthy. Tons of gratitude. No complaints. That's what I hope for.
Awesome. That's good. That's a great place to be in. That's fantastic. People know where to find you. People know how to follow you. I think that if anyone does anything at the end of this podcast, send you a message, say what an impact it had. But also, yeah, go get the book. I think that's probably the best thing we can do. And then, yeah, if there's ever an opportunity, Jace, for us to help bring you out to Australia, and even if it's just a holiday for the family or do something else, then, yeah, we'd love to be a part of that. So, from both of us and from our listeners, thank you for finally being on the podcast. It's been an honor. So much to share and so many questions we finally got answered and stories we've heard before but got the details of. So, yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, no, I got to make my way out to Australia one day. I haven't been there. We could talk more about that. But if people, you know, want to support the book, go check it out, As Many Reps as Possible. It'll be available digital and audio soon in January. And you can just find me on, you know, Instagram, Twitter, Jason Kleeper. And I hope that at some point for anybody listening, I mean, just says, hey, you said something on some podcast. I read your book. I did this. And you made a profound impact on the way I had an outlook. That'll make me get a lot of fulfillment. So I hope that happens today and every day.
Well, it did for two people today, so we appreciate that.
All right. Well, thank you very much, guys. I hope you have a great day.
Thanks, Jess. All right. What an amazing episode with Jason. Jason, thank you so much for being on. It was a true honor, as we mentioned. If you guys want to pick up a training journal, you can go to thetrainingjournalbook.com/MMP. Oh, sorry, trainingjournalbook.com. Use the code MMP15 and that will get you 15% off your journal. It's a perfect time to set new goals for the year, chase down your 100-day goal. We are less than 30 days out, so it's very exciting stuff there. As well, you can go on to truecoach.co/MMP. That will get you an offer. It gets you
a free trial and then 50% off your first month.
Nice. So really, really good offer there. And then as well, guys, you can go to whatify.com/MMP and that will get you the offer there. So, well, if you're listening to this, as we mentioned at the start of the podcast, if you're an app or a web developer, you are highly skilled in that area, or you know someone like that, please reach out to us. We have an exciting opportunity for you in 2019 to work with us on something that we're really excited to build out. So reach out, let us know, and we'll speak to you soon. Thanks, guys. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.